Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to another show of U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown, and our co-host, Dr. Jerome Hyler, is in the studio with us today. Doctor, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Chauncey. I'm very good.
It's always a pleasure to have you on your show. Doc, you say you're reporting on a tale of two tales. That tale, not like a dog's tale. What two tales are you talking about?
The columnist Virginia Postrel, writing in the New York Post back on February 6, 2017, I think said it best. Cultures are held together by the stories they tell about themselves, and America is struggling to find a new national story, one that can acknowledge past injustices without becoming defined by them. The old all-or-nothing morality tale of good America has too often been superseded by an all-or-nothing morality tale of evil America, which proclaims that every apparently positive accomplishment disguises a sadistic reality. Now, one reason the left despises Donald Trump is that the left thinks America is damned. Mr. Trump certainly doesn't and never has. He knows what it has allowed him to achieve in his life. These are the two tales, America the good, America the evil. All Donald Trump set out to do in 2016 was to make America great again. In 2016, that promise roused the nation and put the promise keeper into the White House. It speaks to the chest-pounding pride the forgotten men and women of the country feel when they stand for the flag or pledge allegiance to the country for which it stands. The guy and girl down the street are proud of their country. Millions don't mind saying so. That is what MAGA means, and that's why their hats are seen everywhere. Now, while in the hustle and bustle of daily life, too many of us take the blessings of liberty for granted. But when times get tough and the calm of daily life is shattered by danger, the truth comes out. No better case for this can be brought than recalling the days following 9/11. The savage attack and murder of 3,000 innocent men, women, and children touched off a prairie fire of patriotism, a display of flags not seen since the Allied victory over Germany and Japan in the 20th century's Second World War. When it comes down to it, nearly no American will take kindly to the notion that he must surrender his free and easy way of life.
And then there is the left, the progressive, and the liberal elites.
Exactly. The left despises America and can't locate any redeeming feature. It's rotten to the core. They have so much to criticize, and the critics spin and spread their Torah tales of devilish America in their Ivy League towers, their university classrooms, their community colleges, and public school curriculums. Mainstream media outlets pick up and run with the woeful saga of a deplorable, irredeemable, unrepentant America. America's critics look out and see not millions of individuals striving to better their conditions, but so many segregated classes, captive and victimized by a cruel, heartless culture, the culture of capitalism. They decry its corrosive effects on the social fabric. No longer, they say, do people come together or care for one another. In the space once occupied by the common good, they bear witness to a dog-eat-dog, survival of the fittest, lookout for number one wasteland, marred by racism, sexism, homophobia, xenophobia, white privilege, rape culture, toxic masculinity, and rampant police brutality. As Robert Reich, a former Commerce Secretary and longtime critic, concluded, quote, "This is not a society, it's not even a civilization, because there's no civility at its core," unquote. To pursue the almighty buck, say the progressive left wings, The giant corporations are willing to despoil the atmosphere and recklessly endanger the very sustainability of life on Earth. The whole capitalism thing is a corrupt and vicious betrayal of what would otherwise be peaceful social harmony. This is the view of America we hear daily from the left. And detractors point to the country's gross hypocrisy. Americans don't even believe the tales they tell themselves, so the left says. Take the Founding Fathers. They obviously didn't believe in liberty and equality for all. If they had, they wouldn't have bought and sold African slaves, plundered Native American lands, and held their women in virtual bondage. The left basically looks at America through the lens made famous by Karl Marx, oppressor and oppressed, exploiter and exploited, victim and victim and victim. That is all the country's detractors can see.
Doctor, that sounds pretty depressing, but yes, those are the two tales that are now being told everywhere. That is one sharp divide America's experiencing. What do you have to say about the left's depiction of things?
Chauncey, you've heard of, you heard by now of fake news. This is fraudulent cultural criticism on a mind-numbing scale. The race, of course, has always had to contend with scoundrels, heartless, two-legged jungle beasts willing to prey on the innocent, the gullible, and the weak. Yeah, that's true. But nothing in reality answers to the overall depiction the progressives proffer. No, it isn't wrong to point out how the nation's founding principles were compromised and violated from the start. The past was a brutal and cruel place, filled with injustice in many respects. But what the political left, the academic critics, and media elites will never tell you, will never themselves admit, is one, how historically unprecedented the founders' invocation of equality as a fundamental principle for organizing civil society was, how unprecedented in human history. Two, how remarkably far this country has come in realizing the dream of equality under law for all. And above all, three, that it was precisely that founding dream proclaimed over and over by courageous civil rights and women's rights leaders that over time made progress toward full equality possible. Example one. Martin Luther King had a dream that, quote, one day this nation would live out the meaning of its creed, that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. And two, after launching the women's rights movement at the 1848 Seneca Falls Convention in upstate New York, Elizabeth Cady Stanton also recall Jefferson's July 4th declaration demanding, quote, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Yes, it took far too long for those great Americans to have their hopes realized. But it was the nation's first principles, her founding principles, that accompanied every milepost of progress this country passed on her journey to fulfill those noblest of all ideals, liberty and equality for all. Thankfully, the greatest battles are now behind us.
Professor, I have another question. What difference does it make which America any of us thinks we're living in? It is what it is, and that's that.
Chauncey, it actually makes an enormous difference. Today's radical left millennials hate America and take advantage of every opportunity to disparage her, right? But not too long ago, two leaders of the progressive left pleaded with their comrades not to condemn America so loudly, but to accept America as she is, and work to improve her by fighting tirelessly to adopt socialist principles and policies. There was an entire progressive tradition, after all, dating back to the progressive era, the turn of the 20th century, which can act as a precedent for future socialist reforms. That's the anchor. One of those individuals who pleaded for allowances was Saul Alinsky. Everyone has heard of him. The other was a late 20th century philosopher named Richard Rorty, R-O-R-T-Y. In a short book called Achieving Our Country, Rorty wrote that, quote, national pride is to countries what self-respect is to individuals. Again, national pride is to countries what self-respect is to individuals, a necessary condition for self-improvement. Just as too little self-respect makes it difficult for a person to display moral courage, so insufficient national pride makes energetic and effective debate about national policy unlikely. Emotional involvement with one's country is necessary if political deliberation is to be imaginative and productive. Such deliberation will probably not occur unless pride outweighs shame.
But
well,
the left wants
did
to...
Not.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Chauncey. Go ahead.
But the left wants to instill a sense of shame and guilt. Why is that? What does it do?
No good at all. And that's the point. And that was the point that Richard Rorty and Saul Alinsky were trying to instill in their minions. We talked about this in part two of our conversation on why liberal leaders lie a few weeks back. I quoted the evil power seeker, Ellsworth Toohey, from Ayn Rand's novel, The Fountainhead. To gain power, he says, you must, quote, make men feel sinful, make them feel guilty, kill their aspiration and integrity. Once men discover that they're incapable of what they've accepted as noble, they'll feel a sense of guilt, of sin, of their own unworthiness, unquote.
So it really makes a difference what image of America Americans cling to. And there's an awful lot at stake.
Exactly. If I had to sum up my own view, all flaws and imperfections and egregious violations considered, I would say this. A nation is as great as it is free. Prosperity, freedom's delicious fruit, is the practical expression of a nation's greatness and its greatest practical reward. Americans, the freest and most prosperous, are the most generous and caring people to ever people the planet.
Dr. Heiler, I just want to take a moment. For those that are listening to U.S. National Politics, this is America, the goodness that greatness begot. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. My co-host, Dr. Jerome Heiler, is in the studio. So this is the tale you want to tell America, Dr. Heiler. It's a tale of America's goodness, not evil?
Exactly. Yes, this idea that capitalism breeds a vicious selfishness, a me-first, last-and-only culture, is just another egregious lie the left has been spreading, along with all the other lies it has been spreading since way before the Kavanaugh hearings, but especially revealed in the Kavanaugh hearings. If America became a nation of self-interested movers and achievers, so-called selfish Americans, she also became home to a nation of joiners, Americans united over a multitude of worthy causes, never hesitating to lend a neighbor in need a helping hand. This was, and to a large extent still is, after all, a Christian nation. If men were at last free to live for themselves, it did not mean they had to live by themselves. From the earliest years, Americans formed deep fraternal bonds to further their shared values and mutual interests. Only now, the friendships, partnerships, associations, righteous crusades, and commercial projects would be of voluntary and mutual accord. Alexis de Tocqueville, the famous French aristocrat who captured and chronicled the American experience in the early 19th century, found that Americans, quote, have carried to the highest perfection the art of pursuing in common the object of their common desires, and have applied this new science to the greatest number of purposes, unquote. Echoing that very sentiment, but writing half a century later, the writer James Bryce wrote this, quote, democracy has not only taught the Americans how to use liberty without abusing it and how to secure equality, it has also taught them fraternity. There is in the United States a sort of kindliness, a sense of human fellowship, a recognition of the duty of mutual help owed by man to man, stronger than anywhere in the old world, certainly stronger than in the upper or middle classes of England, France, or Germany. Writing 30 years later than James Bryce, noted visitor and philosopher George Santayana observed this, quote, everywhere cooperation is taken for granted as something that no one would be so mean or so short-sighted as to refuse. Together with the will to work and to prosper, it is the essence of Americanism and is accepted as such by all the unkempt polyglot peoples that turn to the new world with the pathetic but manly purpose of beginning life anew. That is the principle of America, unquote. Today, Americans form or join associations for every imaginable purpose under heaven. And when you consider astronomy clubs and space travel enthusiasts above heaven also, there are trade associations, labor unions, fraternal orders, service societies, veterans organizations, self-help groups, medical societies, alumni unions, campus sororities and fraternities, think tanks, animal rescue groups, and gun, fan, and auto clubs, just to name a few of the associations Americans make. Leisure and a vast treasure of disposable income make all of that associating possible. But the largest association of all, the one to which every American belongs, is the free market itself. While it is most often associated with fierce competition, it fosters, it really is a vast cooperative endeavor, allowing millions of voluntary, mutually rewarding deals to be struck daily. One puts one's products or services on the market in the hopes of becoming successful and growing rich. These hopes are driven by the confidence that others will appreciate the benefits those products and services offer and be eager to acquire them. The most successful entrepreneurs happily attract and retain the capital needed to expand their enterprises and put even more people to work. Americans simply believe there's nothing inherently wrong with making money. That doesn't make them selfish, egoist destroyers of other people. Men built businesses, honed valuable market skills, entered a dizzying variety of trades and salaried professions, or just found daring, enterprising spirits in which to invest their own freely acquired capital. Honest ambition was no vice. It still isn't. It consists of offering a quality product or service at a reasonable, mutually rewarding price, of striking a bargain, and keeping one's word. There was one critical caveat, though. Equality was not to apply in all circumstances. Equality of opportunity could not guarantee equality of result. All were not equally inquisitive, talented, or fixated on self-advancement. The laissez-faire economy guaranteed an eventual inequality in the distribution of wealth. For the founders, that posed no moral or actual difficulty. Jefferson expressed it best, quote, to take from one because it is thought his own industry and that of his fathers has acquired too much, in order to spare to others who or whose fathers have not exercised equal industry and skill is to violate arbitrarily the first principle of association, the guarantee to everyone the free exercise of his industry and possession of the fruits acquired by it. Now, there's something else about this, end quote there, by the way. There is something else about the selfishness Americans practice. It leaves millions with the financial means to contribute to public-spirited projects or just partake of charitable good works in one's local community. Why not share one's good fortune with those who have less and are in need? That amounts to no great sacrifice. And that's what Christians do. And as I say, this still is a very much a Christian nation. So I say this again. A nation is as great as it is free. Prosperity is the material expression of a nation's greatness and a free people's greatest practical reward. And Americans, the freest and most prosperous, became the most generous and caring people to ever people the planet. Now, there is so much evidence of that. And I like to point very often to the Jerry Lewis Labor Day Telethon. Those of us who are not millennials, I guess, remember every single Labor Day, Jerry Lewis brought together the very best entertainers, sports figures, musicians, performers in the world to just do their little part to raise money for Jerry's kids. I never forget that one picture of Jerry Lewis at the end of a telethon pointing up to a tote board and pointing out that over 24 hours that telethon took in $58 million just for Jerry's kids, just for research to combat muscular dystrophy, MD. That is so representative of the American people's spirit of charity, of philanthropy, of benevolence, of generosity, of goodwill. That's who Americans are. The left has no clue, and it's vital that we, the forgotten men and women of the country, who the left ignore and would rule over, that we come together, raise our voices, become politically engaged, and elect the kind of people who will restore our greatness, who will make America great again, and just let American goodness take it from there.
Dr. Heiler, thank you so much for today's insight, especially towards the end, what we need to do to save America. Very important.
Just realizing the goodness that American greatness begot. And again, that goodness is all over. I mentioned the Jerry Lewis Labor Day Telethon. I could mention the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, that here, the wealthiest capitalist in the world, Bill Gates, among the wealthiest, certainly, and all of the good work he is doing, not only in America, but around the world. It was a report came out that just disclosed that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, doing the work against malnutrition and malnourishment in Africa, has cut the starvation rate in half on that continent. And the progress continues. The sums of money that people leave on countertop baskets in diners and restaurants and clothing stores and everything, just the change in their pocket that they give to charity for every worthy cause. Have your son go to St. Jude's Hospital and he or your daughter, and he or she will get the very best care in the world. And no one leaves St. Jude's Hospital getting a bill. There is no bill. the money they raise from the good people of this country is enough to sustain their staff, their building, their furnishings, and all the wonderful work they do. There is so much evidence of Americans' goodness. It is a liable, unsupported by a smidgen of evidence to say the culture of America or the culture of capitalism is debased, is selfish, is antagonistic to social harmony. It is just, as I say, another lie the left continues to tell about our country.
Dr. Hyler, thank you very much again. Would there be anything that you would like to give us a snippet or a sneak preview about next week's show? Or do we have to wait?
yes, first I am going to add a couple of things by way of the evidence that I find over the next 7 days of the mm-hmm. goodness of which I speak, how the evidence is all around us. Now, that's just the beginning. Then I want to turn our attention to the swamp, the Washington swamp. And I want to give our listeners an idea of what it is we can do to finally drain the Washington swamp. Because I think, above all else, 2020 has to be the year we show the establishment polls of both parties the door and send an army of Mr. Smiths to Washington to cut programs, to send them to Washington under instruction from the voters, from the forgotten men and women, to cut programs, close agencies, and shrink the size and expense of government. Things are getting way, way out of hand, and there could be hell to pay sooner than anyone imagines because of a $22 trillion debt, because of, all of the uncertainty that is in the stock market, in the bond market, and on Main Street as well. So that's what some of the things we'll be talking about next week.
Dr. Hyler, thank you again. We want to thank all of our listeners for listening to our show today. Please join us next Tuesday, again at 4 o'clock. Today's show, America, the Goodness That Greatness Begot. We look forward to seeing you and listening to you next week. Dr. Hyler, we want to thank our audience again, and God bless you all. And God bless America. Good night.
Thank you, Chauncey. Thank you, listeners.
You're welcome very much.